So good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. This is actually the beauty of new technologies, to be able to connect worldwide and reflect together on key contemporary challenges. And if new technologies, including artificial intelligence, provide us with new opportunities that we would have thought unthinkable last century, there is also the need to tackle the risks they unleash by ensuring that our actions, whether in the field of tech innovation or in the policy world, are always based on a human-centered approach. The Center for AI and Digital Policies aims to ensure that artificial intelligence and digital policies promote a better society, more fair, more just, and more accountable. A world where technology promotes broad social inclusion based on fundamental rights, democratic institutions, and the rule of law. We pursue this mission through a structured program of careful research, policy engagement, and high ethical standards with an inclusive and diverse team. Our aim is to contribute in developing a community of practitioners, academics, and advocates to learn, to collaborate, and to have a meaningful impact on AI policy around the world. It is in this spirit that we have developed a global academic network, free basic and advanced online AI policy clinics, and an AI policy seminar to train a new generation of AI policy leaders who will ensure that AI systems are human-centric and trustworthy. It thus also comes as no surprise that one of our core activities has been the creation of an AI and Democratic Values Index. It is an essential companion to anyone interested in AI policy, and it now covers the AI policy and practices of 50 countries around the globe. Faithful to our inclusive methodology, it is a result of the collaborative work of more than 100 experts worldwide. And right from the outset, we would like to thank and acknowledge the exceptional contribution from CADP members, research group, team leaders, regional coordinators, global academic network, and friends. Actually, the report is now available on our website at cadp.org. We are organizing today's panel on the state of the AI policy world to celebrate the release of the AI and Democratic Values Report. And we are delighted to have as a keynote speech, Eva Kaeli, the Vice President of the European Parliament. She will join us soon, but before she joins, we will have Merv Hickok presenting the key finding of the AI and Democratic Values Report. Merv, the floor is yours.
Thank you so much, Corinne, and let me share my screen very quickly before I start. I hope everyone can see it. Give me 1 second. So today, great opening by Corinne in terms of our center's mission, values, and our activities. It gives me great pleasure today as the research director to share the details of the second edition of our report. At the center, our mission is clear. We aim to ensure that artificial intelligence and digital policies promote a better society, more fair, more just, and more accountable. A world where technology promotes broad social inclusion based on fundamental rights, democratic institutions, and the rule of law. As we embarked upon the first edition of the index in 2020, our goal was clear. We wanted to measure progress toward AI policies that safeguard human rights and the rule of law. Our work required an extensive empirical survey of AI policies and documenting these surveys in countries across the world. It also necessitated metrics which corresponded to widely accepted frameworks and principles, allowing for quantification of commitments and practices. By providing objective quantifiable metrics that are updated year over year, our final goal is to encourage countries to ensure that AI is trustworthy and human-centric. The index bridges that gap between policies and practices with fact-based evaluations of individual countries and ratings and rankings to compare countries and to evaluate trends over time. We call on countries to implement their commitments. The index is based, as I mentioned, on well-established norms and sources of authoritative assessments. For our work, the OECD G20 AI principles was a starting point, as was the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the most widely recognized legal instrument for fundamental rights and human dignity. OECD AI principles is the first global AI policy framework. It is now endorsed by more than 50 countries. Its influence is clear when we review the core of the national AI strategies. The principles promote use of AI that is innovative, trustworthy, and that respects human rights and democratic values. Our methodology also draws on the work of international human rights organizations and data protection experts. Before I go into the highlights and results of this year's report, I do want to thank the more than 100 researchers across 40 countries who collaboratively contributed to this work. This year, we increased our analysis from 30 to 50 countries, which are rated across 12 metrics. The final scores place countries in 5 tiers, and the narrative country reports provide further details of the policies and practices in each of these countries. We also provide update on major AI policy developments of 2021, such as Council of Europe, EU, UN, UNESCO, G7, G20, Africa 50, and such. So let's start with the AI policy highlights of 2020 and looking back. With its recommendations, UNESCO recommended the ban of social scoring and mass surveillance. EU introduced a comprehensive risk-based framework, a draft legislation that is still being discussed. Council of Europe made progress towards AI convention by providing the elements of for a possible legal framework. We see continued progress on the implementation of OECD AI principles. And also the G7 leaders endorsed algorithmic transparency to combat AI bias. We also see US opening up the policy process, embracing democratic values. EU and US started moving toward alignment on AI policy. AI regulation in China, while a positive step, left open some questions about the independent oversight. UN, towards the end of the year, failed to reach an agreement on lethal autonomous weapons. And finally, there is a growing global battle over the deployment of facial recognition that is looming ahead and gaining attraction as each day. So I mentioned that we do have 12 metrics that the countries are scored against and put into tiers. I do want to mention the top 4 countries from 2021 index. Canada, Germany, Italy, and Korea scored in that top tier for their global leadership on AI policy, their commitment to democratic values, as well as meaningful engagement with public on proposed AI strategies. Also important for the top rankings was a well-established data protection infrastructure, support for algorithmic transparency, and a commitment to fairness, accountability, and transparency for AI systems. So some of the notable outcomes in 2021 from these top-tier countries were Canadian authorities determined that ClearView AI was a form of mass surveillance and violated the privacy and data protection rights of Canadians. Germany continued its leadership in AI policy in the European Union, emphasizing data protection for fundamental rights and ongoing public participation on AI policy development. As host of the G20 summit, Italy advanced AI policy proposals, emphasizing data protection and gender equality, diversity, and inclusion. Korea introduced new requirements for AI impact assessments, published guidance on AI personal information protection, and expanded algorithmic transparency. The AI superpowers, the United States and China, did not score as well in the index this year, though there was progress. The United States placed in tier 3. In our report, we concluded that US AI policy process is opaque. The US lacks strong laws for data privacy. However, the US policy, the US rating improved over the past year as the administration stressed a commitment to democratic values and created opportunities for public participation in AI policymaking. In prioritizing concerns about AI bias, US is also moving favorably to promote algorithmic transparency. China ranked in tier 4 because of the widespread use of AI techniques that use of facial recognition against ethnic minorities and political protesters and continued rating of people. We believe that China is now rapidly developing AI systems. There is an urgent need to assess China's actual practices against these global standards for human-centric AI and trustworthy AI. In the past year, China did adopt a privacy law and a regulation for recommendation algorithms. Though similar to GDPR and EU proposals to regulate algorithms, the Chinese legislation lacks necessary independence from the state authorities. However, China's rating did improve over the past year as it endorsed the UNESCO recommendation on AI ethics, which will require the end of social scoring system and piloting of these practices. There were several other changes to country ratings over the past year, most of them favorably. Turkey's rating improved by following the publication of the National AI Strategy, the authority of independent agencies to review AI practices, and support for several principles outlined in the Universal Guidelines for AI. However, the rating for Brazil fell as the country moved forward with the controversial legislation for AI that jurists and advocates say they would diminish the fundamental rights and would also make it difficult to establish liability when AI system caused harm. Israel dipped to tier 4 because it is among a handful of countries that is not a member of UNESCO and therefore did not endorse the UNESCO recommendations on AI ethics. So for those who remember our index from last year, we had 5 recommendations for all the countries as we move forward and as we're looking at measuring the implementation endorsement versus practices. We mentioned that countries must establish national policies for AI that implement democratic values, that they need to ensure public participation in AI policymaking, and also create robust mechanisms for independent oversight of these systems, that they needed to guarantee fairness, accountability, transparency in all AI systems. And they needed to commit to these principles in the development, procurement, and implementation of AI systems, especially for public services. And our final recommendation last year was countries must halt the use of facial recognition for mass surveillance. Going into 2021, or looking at 2021 country reviews and policy updates, we added 3 more recommendations that countries must curtail the development of little autonomous weapons. Countries must begin implementation of UNESCO AI recommendation, and countries must establish a comprehensive legal binding convention for AI. Post this event, you can find the details of the index, both the 2020, as well as our new second edition 2021 at our website. And with that, Corinne, I would like to pass it back on to you.
Thank you very much, Merv. And now we will continue our State of the AI Policy World review after this presentation of the key findings of the AI and Democratic Values Report, with a keynote speech with Eva Kaili. Eva Kaili is the Vice President of the European Parliament, which, as you all know, is currently involved in decisive negotiations for the future of AI regarding the draft EU AI Act. But I must say, that another reason why we are particularly honored and proud to welcome Vice President Kaili today is that for an organization like CADP, which promotes the involvement of women in science and new technologies, she is a true model. Eva received the European Award as an MEP in 2018 for her work on the digital agenda for Europe. She did an outstanding work as chair of the Future of Science and Technology panel and its Center for Artificial Intelligence, which aims to contribute to the quality and coherence of discussion and policymaking as the EU seeks to coordinate its efforts and influence global AI standard setting. She was also key in launching a collaboration with OECD Parliamentary Network on AI. So without further ado, Madame la Vice-Présidente, the floor is yours.
Thank you for such kind words, Karin. It's really an honor, actually, because you have helped me achieve all of those things, because we have been collaborating from different platforms, and I have been following also the Center for AI and Digital Policy and Mr. Dukakis, and I want to thank you for your kind words. I've worked with the OECD, I thank the mayor for basically covering almost every aspect that is important in this discussion. And I will try just to share some light from the European Artificial Intelligence Act, because we are now, let's say, a bit more mature. We received the text, and the discussion is starting now in our committees. I think it's very important also to have, it's very timely to have actually the second edition of the AI and Democratic Values Index that you're presenting. Let me just start by saying that we have these numbers that they are really impressive when we talk about AI transforming our world, society and economy. Every time there's an updated number, we've seen now that it has been valued at $15 trillion by 2030, it would contribute to the global economy, AI and everything around AI. So of course, our duty as policy makers is to ensure that it's exponential growth, because it is indeed the only technology that I could really say it's exponential. It can create and expand the opportunities for people, and of course, in line with like-minded countries and with our democratic values and principles. We now have also on the table the Declaration for Digital Rights and Principles. This is the compass of Europe on how we want to legislate. And I think this spirit will go through all our legislative efforts, that they are coming together. It's like they are completing this puzzle for the digital economy in terms of legal framework. So this Artificial Intelligence Act, actually, it's, I would say, an unbelievable effort to have a trustworthy AI that puts people in the center of this technological revolution. I remember me and some colleagues, we were calling for that since 2018, and in text 2019. And in this sense, I would say, basically acts also as a unifying framework that brings legal certainty also to developers and providers that they operate in the European market. And they understand what they have to respect so that they are also future-proof. Let me also say another number, and I think it will be the final one I will use. There are 600 AI policy initiatives taking place in parallel among policy frameworks, legal rules, ethical principles. I think we need to agree in the end at one basic framework that we will all have to respect, and it will be binding by law. This proposal is beginning, but I believe that at the end of it, it will be really mature and blueprint for everybody to follow. We are ambitious to say that we want to follow the example of GDPR and the impact that it had. So we were bold enough to take this step, although the criticism that we are creating frictions for innovation is always there, but we believe that we cannot not control this technology. We have to set the rules, because the simple definition starts from automation, but it ends up into autonomous systems that cannot just solve problems, but take decisions and act. and we all understand what this could mean. So basically the discussion now is in the convergence of several points, the embedding values in AI technology, the ethics by design. If they tell you it's not possible, it is possible. So setting limits to this autonomy of AI systems, having human in the loop and having human oversight. I know in the UK they don't want it, but they are facing failures of AI systems that they have been embarrassing. And at the school, there was an AI grading system that completely failed, and they blamed the algorithm. So we still believe in EU that we need to have human oversight and human in the loop, transparent and explainable algorithms as much as this is possible, safeguards against discrimination and biases, the right to redress, the right to have offline options and disconnect, because this, we believe, it's basically how we want to use AI, because AI can achieve a lot. It crystallizes this work into a horizontal regulatory framework for applications in the European market. Now we've seen that we have some legal and technical obligations for the AI systems using a risk-based approach. We're not there yet to define already what it's going to be included in the high-risk approach. But again, we know the principles of that. So the main element is to regulate the applications that could be harmful. They could damage our health. They could violate our fundamental rights. These are high-risk applications that they will be subject to strict ex-ante requirements for data training, for validation and testing, for risk management measures, transparency, human oversight again. The unacceptable risks, I think it's something that's more clear to us already, is, for example, systems that use subliminal manipulation, social scoring. Even China committed to that. Let's see, they committed at least to what UNESCO suggested. Social scoring by public authorities. Here there is a disclaimer. We have to see also what's happening in the private sector. Real-time remote biometric identification in public spaces, with the exceptions for law enforcement. Then the sectors that I believe will be really influenced are the sectors for management and operation of critical infrastructures, education and vocational training, employment and recruitment. We've seen already negative examples that we need to avoid also in Europe. The access to essential private and public services, law enforcement, predictive AI, predictive policing. These are of high risk for us. And migration and asylum and administration of justice, of course. So the limited risk ones, which actually are the most, and the minimal risk, they are the most applications out there. They will have some specific transparency obligations. They must notify users. For example, I am a chat. Good, and I don't want to play with your mind, I identify myself. That minimal risk that they should have voluntarily code of conduct, for example, video games, chatbots, spam filters. Yes, there has to be cybersecurity, but this is different. So in terms of AI, they would have the minimal obligations. There is an interesting suggestion here to have a board to oversee the implementation of the regulation, because we know, again, I said this is an exponential technology. This means the whole life cycle of the AI system could actually change in just a few days. So we need to have a monitoring possibility. We'll see how that goes. It's not easy, but definitely we need to have some safeguards for the whole life cycle of the system of AI. And regulatory sandboxes to test and develop AI solutions would be very important also for governance and cyber security matters. However, I would say again that the main debate in Europe is what counts as a risky AI system. And this is why it's very important to have knowledgeable people like you. I see also my colleague that we have worked together with the International Advisory Board at STOA. She worked a lot on the most important matters for humans, and I think we will be able to amend this this file in order to be a file that could become an example. I think a few more things that could be of interest in this discussion is that maybe we lack common methodologies to assess the risks, and this is what we have to establish to be able to identify accordingly and have the same standards with our allies. And we need to have more transparency and explainability in the operation and ensure the rights that I mentioned, to switch basically from a profit-driven ecosystem to one that is going to be centered around human agency and fundamental rights, and setting the bar high for others to follow suit. Finally, I think there is a very strong geopolitical angle here that I cannot avoid coming back to, because we have regions that they are making progress. We have great examples. Maybe we can also include some of the suggestions and the things that we've seen. But we definitely need to collaborate, because this is a cross-border technology. We cannot avoid collaborating actually and looking only what we do in the EU market. Canada classified ClearView AI as a form of mass surveillance that violates the right to privacy. Korea has introduced new requirements for AI impact assessments, and the US is already starting to address algorithm transparency. Even China, as I said before, they are working on privacy law and recommendation algorithms. So I think this patchwork of initiatives is coming together as like more pieces of this puzzle we're trying to complete in Europe in order to have this big picture of what we want to achieve and be able to update it. And I think towards this goal, the AI Democratic Values Index is really an important step. And I want to thank you, and I hope we can walk together in this path to achieve something good for citizens.
Thank you very much for your pioneering work and thoughtful remarks, Vice President Kaeli, pointing out key issues to be discussed in the framework of the adoption of an EU AI Act, and I must say, in any framework regarding AI. Actually, in the AI and Democratic Values report, we dedicate a whole part to the global AI policy landscape, and more particularly, the EU policy and legal framework. And I must say, an alignment between the EU AI Act and the UNESCO recommendation on AI ethics would be welcome in order to ensure a human-centered approach to AI. And I'm sure that some of the issues that you mentioned will be now discussed in the framework of our panel discussion on the state of the AI policy world. So
thank you, Karine. I know we discussed it. Yes, I just wanted to thank you. And I know we discussed initially at the Athens AI Roundtable some of the needs to change the law. So I'm very happy to meet you and listen to your discussion. And thank you again for your kind words.
And don't hesitate to intervene if you wish so. It would be our pleasure. So now we will start our panel discussion. And I would like to introduce first our distinguished speakers. So we will have Fanny Hidvegi. She is the Europe Policy Manager at Access Now. She's responsible for its European policy strategy and manages the EU office. She also got appointed to the European Commission's high-level expert group on AI and serves on the board of the Hungarian Civil Liberties Union. Eduardo Bertone is the representative of the Regional Office for South America of the Inter-American Institute of Human Rights and is also Global Clinical Professor of Law at NYU, and was the first director of the Argentinian Data Protection Authority. Jibu Elias is a leading AI expert whose work focuses on building a unified AI ecosystem in India. He is the chief architect and research and content head of India AI, the national AI portal of Government of India. He is also senior AI researcher with NASSCOM, the premier trade body and chamber of commerce of the tech industry in India, and a member of the OECD network of experts. Last but of course not least, Stuart Russell is a professor of computer science at the University of California at Berkeley, holder of the Smith Zadeh Chair in Engineering, and director of the Center for Human Compatible AI. Stuart is the co-author with Peter Novick of The Bible in the Field, the most popular textbook called Artificial Intelligence, A Modern Approach, used in more than 1,500 universities in 135 countries. And he recently published a new book entitled Human Compatible, AI and the Problem of Control, which says it all about his research agenda. And Merv Hickok, our research director, will also be joining the panel. So of course, we will be welcoming questions from the audience. So we will check out the chat regularly to come back and to have a meaningful exchange. As we can see, we tried to really have key experts to discuss, have a key discussion on the state of AI policy worldwide. Now, maybe I will start by a question to you all. What challenges are ahead for AI policymakers wishing to uphold and promote democratic values? Thank you. Who would like to kickstart the discussion? Yes, Eduardo?
Well, thank you very much. It's happy to for me to break the ice. Thank you for the invitation. I would like to talk very briefly about my perspective from Latin America and how artificial intelligence is impacting in Latin America, to go to your question, which is the challenges. After serving as for almost 5 years data protection authority in my country, in Argentina, I returned in some way to the academia and in the Inter-American Institute of Human Rights, which is the academic branch of the Inter-American System on Human Rights. We are now working on technology and human rights, and of course artificial intelligence is one of the topics that we are researching and doing some activities. In less than 2 months, we are organizing, we will organize a webinar on artificial intelligence in the public sector. And why I'm saying that? Because in Latin America, and this is globally, artificial intelligence is growing as a technology, not only in the private sector, but also in the public sector. And if we need to talk about the challenges, I really think, that technology, and particularly artificial intelligence, might be a tool to enhance and to protect human rights and to strengthen human rights, but also might be a tool to damage human rights. So the challenge that is how we are going to use technology, artificial intelligence technologies, in a way that will not damage human rights. And that's why I really think that the report is very useful. And it's very useful because it established a methodology that countries can use to see how they are doing in terms or in respecting human rights. If you see the methodology, for example, the methodology includes something that for us is very important, which is the implementation of Universal Declaration of Human Rights, or transparency, algorithmic transparency, or Data Protection Authority's endorsement of Global Privacy Assembly 2018 resolution. So including that in the resolutions is really important, is really helpful, and the challenge is to comply with that. I think that the countries, it's happy to see that in all the lists, there are three Latin American countries, all of them in tier two and tier three. It's interesting to see the difference between 2020 and 2021 in the case of Brazil, because we receive information about that the implementation is not going in the good direction. So that is the influence of the report in the future. And I think that it will be very useful. And the main challenge is how countries can adapt, you know, their national policies on artificial intelligence in a way that respect human rights. It seems to be very broad, what I'm saying, very obvious, but sometimes the obvious things are the most important things to, keep in mind.
Thank you very much, Eduardo. I guess maybe we can have another, it would be interesting to have another perspective. So Jibu Elias, if you would like.
Sure, thank you, Karen. So first of all, I want to congratulate for the launch of this report, and there's a famous saying, right? If you cannot measure it, you can't improve it. And that's where you know, the relevance of the artificial intelligence and democratic index comes into the place. Now, coming to the question on challenges for policymakers, I think the biggest challenges for the policymakers is the speed of technology and the speed of policymaking, right? So we live in a world where it's all about policy planning, but we need to shift into a sort of real-time policy adaptation, right? Things are happening fast. So that's one of the biggest challenge I think policymakers are facing right now. At the same time, like Eduardo pointed out, you know, AI is a powerful tool to solve many of our problems. So if AI has, in the last century, even AI has provided answer for many of our challenges, and the coming century, I feel it will pose more questions, right? And I think that our inability to comprehend what are the long-term social consequences of AI, you know, technologies, and how can, you know, they be developed developed without full participation of every community that is being affected, is one serious problem I'm seeing, right? For example, when it comes to policy making, many of the communities are underrepresented, you know, especially females from the global south and more. And I think finally, again, one challenge that the policymakers will struggle to solve is the data problem, right? The data will always bear the mark of its history. You know, Kate Crawford said that, right? And the disparity or the digital divide between this data, you know, and many of these AI tools are developed by a small group of people from a certain kind of background. And, you know, and people from low and middle-income countries are, you know, radically underrepresented in this data set. So if I remember, there's a World Economic Forum report or white paper in 2018, which said that the average household in US can generate a data point every 6 seconds. Now you look at a country like Mozambique, where about 90% people lack internet access. The average household generates zero digital data points. Now, when you are making policy, global policy that include, you know, policy or, you know, framework for these people also, we have to take all these things into the consideration. I think those are the biggest challenges for our policymakers going forward.
Thank you very much, Jibu, for your input. Indeed, public participation and inclusiveness would be at the heart of a human-centered approach. And maybe to switch somehow, but complement your approach, if I would like to ask perhaps two questions to Fanny and Stuart. The first one to Fanny is, do you think that it is time to establish red lines for AI? And it resonates with Eduardo Ruiz-Marx's on protection of human rights. And in the same vein to Stuart, do you think there's a need for countries to address seriously the issue of lethal autonomous weapons? And how can we move forward given the recent development in the field? And of course, feel free to react to the remark of the other panelists.
Thank you very much. The answer is absolutely yes, and it ties in nicely with what I would have responded to the original question as well, because if you allow me, I'll give one challenge and redlining from a lawmaker's perspective, but also from civil society. I think in the European context, at least, what you see in the AI Act proposal, the biggest challenge will be the future proofing. And it relates to red lines very directly, because there is a very limited way to update some of the highest risk headings or applications in the Act. And this is one of the most important improvements civil society is asking for. And the other one from a civil society perspective, but also speaking of red lines, I believe that one of the biggest opportunity the EU Act brings is exactly prohibitions or red lines, if you will, which is obviously something we've been long advocating for, but they're definitely not going far enough. And the biggest challenge here in a democratic context is the evergreen law enforcement and national security exemptions. which sometimes make the whole prohibition moot. And one example for that in the AI Act as it stands now is this so-called remote biometric identification, which in human language is about the one-to-many comparison. And we can get into the specifics of that red line, but we strongly urge not to implement some of the wide-ranging law enforcement and national security exemptions as they are now.
Thank you very much. Actually, I think that biometric identification is one of the key issues that has been coming back again and again in our report regarding different countries. So indeed, this is a huge issue, and we would like to congratulate you for your action in this regard with other European NGOs. And of course, CIDP was happy to support your initiative. And Stuart, what would you think, since you're the last of the speakers, what do you think of what the others has to say? And if you would like to say a few words about lethal autonomous weapon, which is also one of the key issues, we would really appreciate. Thank you.
So I want to second what Jibu said, that if you can't measure it, you can't improve it. And I think the report does a great job in that regard. I want to add to the red lines. And one of them, Ava Kiley mentioned, which is a ban on the impersonation of human beings. And arguably, this is really a fundamental human right to know whether you're communicating with another human being or not. Because without that, the whole concept of human dignity itself is likely to be invalidated. And we might think, well, this is like chatbots and things like that, or, you know, telephone systems where you call up and you're not quite sure whether it's a person you're speaking to. But I was just listening to a talk about the metaverse, which is, you know, a nascent technology for immersive virtual reality. And companies are already talking about putting fake human beings into the metaverse who will pretend to be your friend, but all the while they're basically trying to convince you to buy something or convince you to vote for somebody. And they can put, you know, millions or billions of these entities into that world. And I think this could be absolutely catastrophic for human rights, for democracy, for our sense of self. So I think that's a very important thing. Another problem that we're seeing with democracy is that many, many people are living in an alternate universe. And you can't really have any kind of democratic debate or come together to solve problems when you're just living in a different universe altogether. And that has to do with the ability of the AI algorithms in social media to basically nudge people tens of thousands of times every year. The algorithms are nudging you to change who you are because what they want to do is they want to maximize the clicks, maximize the engagement. And to do that, they have learned to change people so that they are more predictable, more avid consumers of certain types of content. And at least anecdotally and empirically, it seems like what they've learned to do is to turn people into extremists of any kind. They don't care what kind of extremist you are, but the more extreme you are, the more likely you are to click on the content that they send you. So that's what they've learned to do. And this is a result of what we call reinforcement learning algorithms. So those are algorithms that learn from rewards, which is the clicks or the not clicks. They learn to get more reward in the future. And if you think about whether it's a good idea to connect a reinforcement learning algorithm to a human being, right? Inevitably, the algorithm is going to learn to manipulate the human being. That's a mathematical consequence of how it's designed. So there should be a red line to ban the connection of reinforcement learning in human-facing information systems. And I think that gets to what the EU AI regulations are really about, which is the protection of fundamental rights. And one of the fundamental rights in Europe is the right to mental integrity. So information systems, not just cars and airplanes and medical devices, information systems are high-risk systems because they can damage your mental integrity. And I think it's essential that the EU stick to this, despite many attempts that seem to be going on now to water it down and to have carve-outs for entire classes of AI systems that people are trying to get exempted from regulation. For example, general purpose AI systems, so systems that can do many things, would be unregulated. Whereas if they can only do one thing, then they would be regulated, which makes no sense whatsoever. So those are a few reactions to some of the previous discussion. On the lethal autonomous weapons front, as Mervyn mentioned, the report now recommends that countries should adopt policies to restrict lethal autonomous weapons. And she also mentioned that the UN had failed. So in December, even before the meetings opened, the United States announced, as Russia had previously, that they would not support any negotiations on a legally binding instrument. And in the Geneva negotiations, the CCW, they have to proceed by consensus. So if any nation says, we are not interested in negotiating on a legally binding instrument, then that means it can't happen, particularly when it's one of the major powers. So we have an alliance between the US and Russia, an unholy alliance, we might say, whose purpose is to ensure that they can continue to produce what will inevitably be a new generation of weapons of mass destruction. We might call it mass selective destruction because a large swarm of AI powered weapons, think of it as a swarm of locusts blanketing an entire city, where each locust has a lethal weapon and can seek out whoever it's designed to target and kill them. So that's the kind of weapon that the AI community is most concerned about. And we're simply asking the countries, please could you ban these kinds of anti-personnel autonomous weapons? And the International Committee of the Red Cross supports this, the UN Secretary General. 68 countries have already come out in favor of a ban. And yet the US and Russia are standing in the way of that. So I would like all the countries, all the journalists who are listening to raise this issue in your countries and just ask people, right? If you ask people, do you like the idea of robots hunting and killing human beings, right? I don't think you're going to get a lot of support for that idea. And people are going to say, well, why aren't they protecting us against this? And I don't have a good answer for you. And I don't think the politicians really have a good answer either. So I think that's where we stand. The diplomatic activity will move to the UN General Assembly, where we don't require unanimity to move forward. Or there may be a process that operates outside the UN altogether, as happened with landmines, which has been a quite successful treaty process. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Stuart, for your very thoughtful remarks on the topic. Actually, in the ADV report, we really tried to emphasize the issue of lethal autonomous weapons. And we also mentioned the position of the UN Secretary General, who has called repetitively for the ban on laws. We hope he will be followed. What you are mentioning actually makes me think of what should governments do actually to promote human control. But before going to this question, I would like to give the floor to Merve. Merve?
Karin, thank you very much. Just tying some of my comments with the previous panelists and as well as VP Kaoli's comments, I see the biggest challenge for policymakers, when we're talking about the geopolitical interest and power relationships, as well as profit-driven technologies, as losing the sight and focus on fundamental rights and human dignity in an attempt to find an acceptable solution that all the parties around the table are going to come to accept. I hope the policies aim high and hold those values high, versus coming to a lowest common denominator. I also see, to Eduardo's point, a lot of private companies becoming embedded in public services. That was one of our biggest concerns from since last year, since the beginning. The lines of who's holding data, what objectives are embedded in these systems, who's accountable, who provides oversight, is becoming very blurry. And we see a number of countries as well test bedding these technologies for their benefit, for power benefit, versus serving their citizens. About the question about the red lines, I absolutely agree with the panelists about centering for the need of red lines to start with, and for centering and prioritizing human dignity as well. If an AI system doesn't respect the dignity and fundamental rights and aspirations and capacity of humans to flourish, it doesn't matter if it's used by public or private entities. And it doesn't matter if we have safeguards around it. We should have certain red lines that, for the benefit of humanity and dignity, should not be there in the first place. We see the systems that the common characteristics of the systems as providing mass surveillance, pseudoscientific systems that rank, categorize humans under predictive or analysis concepts, which ultimately serve discriminatory purposes and serve to endanger human lives in the case of lethal autonomous weapons as well, which don't have any place in our society. And I think they all converge in providing the means to oppress, exploit, discriminate, or manipulate humans. So I think there's a clear direct line between these technologies and where we want to draw the red lines.
Thank you, Merve. Actually, we might not have all the answers, but already trying to find what are the key questions are the first step to find answers. So actually, I think there are two main questions that have been pointed out. The first one is about human control and how should governments ensure it. We've tried in our report to analyze how they've been doing so far. If we hope that there will be new solutions and they will implement solutions in order to ensure human control. And I would just like to mention an open question from one of our participants, Jonathan Kernyavan, who asked actually, how do we recommend third world country to leapfrog policy development to take this opportunity for digital inclusion and literacy, but also as well thought out AI policy that is helpful for society? I guess this is about public participation. This is an open question, and we hope that with the efforts of all of you together, we will manage to find some answers to this question and advise governments so that there can be a trustworthy AI. I would like now to give the floor to Mark Rotenberg, the president and founder of CADP, so that he can deliver some concluding remarks and let us know how he envisages the state of the AI policy world based on your insightful remarks. Thank you very much to all.
Thank you very much, Corinne, and thank you to all of our panelists. It's been an extraordinary discussion today, beginning with Merva's presentation of our updated report, AI and Democratic Values. And I wanted to thank Merva and all of the participants in our research group, which she has helped direct. As she had mentioned, over 100 people now in almost 40 countries making possible this report with key findings, key recommendations. And Jabu making, you know, a guiding point for us, which is that if you can't measure something, you can't really improve it. And we know from our background in the human rights world that governments are quite willing to endorse a declaration, but the hard work begins trying to assess implementation and determining whether progress is being made toward the goals that the governments have established. And that is at the heart of this report. We want to understand not only what governments have committed to, but also what they are doing in fact. And in that context, of course, we are very interested to see the developments at the European Union with the AI Act. We're very grateful for the participation of the Vice President, Eva Kaili. She gave a wonderful overview. I'll just want to highlight a couple of the points that she made in her presentation, which we will, you know, take back and consider. But she did talk about the need to establish a binding framework to set rules, recognizing that there are literally hundreds of policy frameworks and ethical frameworks for the use of AI. She talked about embedding values, including human oversight, transparency, and redress. She said, yes, this is a risk-based approach, but in the category of high risk, we need to look not only at systems that are harmful in the sense of public safety, but we also need to look at protecting fundamental rights and particular concerns about subliminal manipulation, which was a point also that Stuart picked up on in his comments, the importance of maintaining human agency and human dignity in the design of these systems. I was struck also by her remarks regarding which sectors are most likely to be impacted by the EU AI Act. And it is everything, of course, from recruitment, the employment determinations, immigration, and law enforcement, where I think in particular groups such as FANI's Access Now plays an absolutely vital role in ensuring the protection of fundamental rights as these systems are deployed. And Eduardo as well drew attention to the close connection, which we have identified in our report, between fundamental rights and data protection in the world of AI, because so many of these systems are driven by the collection and use of personal data, which is a problem that is very familiar to people like Eduardo, who have worked in the data protection field for many years. I wanted to note also several of Stuart's points at the conclusion. We were very grateful to have his participation. Thank you, Stuart, for joining us. But of course, you know, the challenges that AI poses are not just the black mirror scenarios of the drone swarms, which, you know, this year, according to one UN report, actually became real in the civil war in Libya, where it appears that automated weapons actually track down retreating soldiers. This is a nightmare scenario, and the urgency of addressing this is immediate. But Stuart also pointed to a number of other challenges that we need to keep in mind as we carry forward our work. Of course, the risk of the impersonation of others, minimizing human dignity, he described as being potentially catastrophic for the sense of self. How AI systems are used to generate extremism and political dialogue that makes more difficult the solving of common problems. How important it is to protect mental integrity. And finally, to bring a couple of themes together, I think one of the areas where the EU AI Act could begin the process of improvement would be by recognizing that general purpose AI is not the lowest level of regulatory concern, but of course it's the highest level of regulatory concern, because it is the AI conception that will have the broadest impact across the most sectors and the most areas of human activity. So just a wonderful conversation today. Thank you all so much for your participation. And to those who are joining us online, we'd like to invite you to visit our website, caidp.org. The complete report is there, the highlight is there, the press releases are there. We have a mailing list. We have lots of opportunities to get you engaged in our work. And again, thank you, Corinne and Merva and everybody else for your just wonderful participation today. We're very grateful.
Thank you and see you soon.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Let's keep the good work.
Thank you for having me. Bye.